on the grass. The lunatic is on the grass, remembering games and daisy chains and laughs. Got to keep the loonies on the path. The lunatic is in the hall. The lunatics are in my hall. The paper holds their folded faces to the floor. And every day the paper boy brings more. And if the dam breaks open many years too soon, and if there is no room on the hill, and if your head explodes with dark provokes too, I'll see you on the dark side of the moon. The lunatic is in my head. The lunatic is in my head. You raise the blade, you make the change, you rearrange me till I'm sane. You lock the door and throw away the key. There's someone in my head, but it's not me. And if the cloud bursts thunder in your ear, you shout and no one seems to hear. And if the band you're in starts playing different tunes, see you on the dark side of the moon.
Returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice, I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just catching up with this broadcast, we're listening to Culture Wars. Authors talk about their books on contemporary cultural issues and respond to questions from the audience.
I would say in the same way that I say that the media is motivated by profit, politicians are motivated by electoral results. And so the reason that we've seen movement, particularly from Democrats on gay marriage, is because they realized what a big piece of that played in the electoral fortunes that we saw in 2012. Mm. So the big question in 2014 is what kind of electorate is going to show up? Because what we've had in 2010 and in 2004, in these off-year elections, we've had a much older, a much more conservative electorate show up than showed up in 2008 and in 2012, courtesy of Barack Obama. Mm. So the question is, what kind of electorate will we see on 2014? And if the Republicans take another hit where they lose seats in the House, then all of a sudden they realize that this strategy is going to lead them to ruin. And nothing motivates a politician like the threat they're going to lose their job.
But what I don't think they're going to lose their jobs in these gerrymandered, fundamentalist Bible Belt districts. that are overrepresented in the Senate and in the House. And so I think we're going to keep having this fight, like we continue to have this fight on abortion rights.
It'll be interesting. If we do see the same results that we saw this last time, there'll be enough of a chipping away that, you know, they'll have to reconsider their position. But if the same old electorate shows up, we'll be right in the middle of the same fight that you were talking about.
Okay. Oh, wow. Karen, we're now talking about gun violence yet again. And in fact, because of the Newtown shootings and, of course, Obama's legislation it actually passed, right? But it just was filibustered, did not come to a vote. Or anyway, he lost that, and he was visibly angry about that. But we keep returning to this argument that it's the media that's causing all this violence that's infecting people. And so it takes us, you know, it moves us away from public policy, and we just talk about what the media is doing. And in your book, you actually say there's nothing to support that, but people, you know, are really want to believe it. And we just talk about that, you know, some.
Yeah, I think it's a very popular belief that, well, there's a lot of violence in video games and movies and television, and we see it, and we could easily be appalled by it. What we don't usually see are the actual studies that we hear about in the news that say, well, this latest study has shown that video games make young people more violent. I recommend the next time you hear about that in the news that you actually look up that study and see how they actually conducted the study. So that's what I do in my book, is I review these studies. Now, some of the research that claims that video games conclusively make young people violent, first of all, they're done on introductory to psychology freshman students in college. These are most dangerous young people that we should find out, you know, their propensity for violence. I hope not.
I don't know.
The other thing, too, is if you look at some of the methods that they use as proxy measures for violence, in one study, it is playing a violent video game and then reading aggressive-sounding words on a screen, and if you read them quickly, that's deemed having aggressive thoughts. So I always recommend look at what these studies are actually doing. Don't look at the press releases. And sometimes the actual authors of these studies do not make the same claims that they get as they sound when they're reported in sound bites. Oftentimes, social scientists are much more, cautious about stating their findings. But this is a really popular story, and what's interesting to me is how the news media seems to love the story of the problem of media violence. And if you look at violence, if you start with actual violence, you see that there are much more mundane patterns to determine whether a young person is more or less likely to be violent. Now, these high-profile incidents that we sometimes hear about, they seem to kind of galvanize people and say we have to finally do something about these video games or movies or television. And we often ignore everyday violence, the most likely causes of violence. First of all, young people are most likely to be the victims of violence at the hands of adults, not each other. We don't ask the media question when it comes to adults, and I don't suggest that we do. So there's a lot of kinds of violence, urban violence. That goes on a lot. We don't create this national crisis over urban violence the way that we do when there's a shooting, you know, a tragic shooting, but a shooting that involves young people, at least young people in a suburban, predominantly white neighborhood. And so these are the kinds of questions that I suggest that we start asking when we're thinking about actual violence. It's very tempting to get caught up in the media violence question. One of the things I write about is media violence by its nature grabs our attention. That's why it's there. It's profitable. It sells well overseas. But in terms of really understanding violence, social scientists have been looking at this for a long time. We ignore the more dull factors that don't make for a good news report, issues like family violence, substance abuse. One thing that I don't quite get is why so many of the psychologists that do the media effects research don't study mental health issues more. Right. We have a mental health crisis in this country. We don't have mental health treatment for enough people. And that's the story, but it's more expensive to focus on that than it is, well, can't we do something for once and for all about video games or movies?
Well, right. You know, and can you really do something about video games and texting? And, you know, the media keeps, you know, getting more and more sophisticated and more, you know, ubiquitous. And
every so often, Congress will hold a hearing. This has happened, you know, over the last several decades, and maybe they'll call movie producers into a hearing, and there'll be a nice dog and pony show, and they'll be berated in front of cameras on C-SPAN. And that's the end of it, because the industry says, okay, we'll have stricter ratings. Maybe we'll have television ratings now. The video game industry said, okay, we'll self-regulate, we'll have ratings. But the First Amendment and the Supreme Court ruling in 2011 that basically decided this case about video games, the Supreme Court has said this is protected by the First Amendment. So it makes for politicians to seem like, hey, we're on your side, we're protecting your children, we're on your side of the culture wars. But in reality, there's very little that can be done. And frankly, I don't think we want to have a culture czar in this country telling us what is appropriate media content and what is.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
I would say on the media violence issue, one of the things that people who work in media know, for example, is that the entire premise of a free broadcast TV system is that we show you images that make you want to buy a car, or that make you want to eat a Big Mac, or that make you want to buy certain tennis shoes, and then you go out and you do it. So the idea that we could show you constant images of a police officer who is wronged and then goes out and shoots five people and makes it right over and over and over again, that doesn't have some kind of effect, logically doesn't make sense to us. That there has to be some impact from constantly showing you images that reinforce the idea that violence can accomplish something. The studies are inconclusive about it, but they don't necessarily say that there's no impact. They just say that it's hard to figure that out, because some social scientists believe that people, even in their unconscious mind, can distinguish between an actual person and a fictional person. So you can, a healthy person can have a lot of fun playing a video game, but when they are in a situation where they're arguing with somebody, they don't automatically think that they're going to strike that person or commit violence against that person. And that's the one question that I think, frankly, we haven't studied enough to really understand. Is there something about all of this? Because, you know, I love my violent, I love my violent media. I love Sons of Anarchy.
You do?
I love The Sopranos. You know, I love Silence of the Lambs. You know, I'm a media critic who likes a lot of media that is violent. But I do also wonder about the impact of that, and I don't think we can totally shrug it off. But the solution to that, of course, is not necessarily to handcuff the people who are making the media. I do think we have to have more discussion, more realistic discussion about these images and how they impact people and who should have access to them. And you know, as a parent of an 8-year-old, you know, I'm trying to be careful about what she consumes.
I would add to that, too, that we probably need more discussion about why we have so many images of violence. My concern is when the media seems like the only answer, right, and we stop looking at issues relating to poverty, to substance abuse, to, again, family violence, mental health. So I think there's nothing wrong with looking at what role these images might have. And also, I always like to say, parents have every right to decide they don't want violent images in their household. But unfortunately, instead of starting the conversation in the so-called culture wars, often this is the beginning, middle, and end of the conversation about violence, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking, you said more than once that we kind of ignore, we keep ignoring the more complex reality. And this is a big political problem, but it relates to these culture wars. Why do we, you know, why is it that, you know, 70% of the country, not 80%, support abortion rights or supports this or supports that, and yet the discussion and the politics go the other way? It seems to be a disturbing trend to me.
Well, that's politics.
Yes.
And that's because this small minority has taken over the Republican Party.
And they've also taken over media, not taken over, but have a very sophisticated media.
Well, if we want to look at on the background checks on guns, I think it's 98% of Americans or something.
98%
supported the background checks. And the people who blocked it were Republican senators and a few Democrats in red states who are terrified about being taken out by the right in their state. And the, you know, heavily funded NRA lobby is, you know, in lockstep with the sexual fundamentalists. It's the same group of people who have pulled our actual politics so far to the right. So, you know, it gets back to Eric's point about who votes. 40 million people who voted in 2008 did not vote in 2010, and that gave us the Tea Party. Okay, so we have a midterm election coming up. I think people are demoralized because they're seeing, again, there's been no movement. We can't get anything done. So are people going to stay home because of that? Mm-hmm. And the only way, I mean, I agree these are very complex issues to discuss in the media, but if we want our politicians to act on public opinion, we all have to stay involved and push, not just during an election, but in lobbying, so that we can finally break the back of the extremists who are controlling our politics.
Right, right.
Exactly. And you know, we've seen also that advocates on these issues have ways of presenting arguments that may not have much merit. We saw death panels when there was an effort to deal with health care. And this latest, we saw fears of a national gun registry where everyone who had a gun would be, you know, marked down somewhere. The thing I find so surprising about that is you don't think there's a database already somewhere that lists where you have a gun?
Right.
I mean, we live in the modern age. Everything about you is accessible on the internet, mm-hmm, in some place,
right,
way, shape, or form. And if the government wants that information, they will gather it, whether or not you're aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
But all we're doing is we're preventing our law enforcement officers from having, you know, the tools to go after people who are getting guns illegally, mm-hmm, buying them at gun shows and things like that. So, you know, one of the things we have to be careful about is that these inauthentic arguments sort of spread through the media, and they spread. You know, one of the things I talk about in the book is that the fragmentation of media gives consumers more power than ever. You may not feel that way, but you have more power now than media consumers have ever had in history, because you can choose where you're going to see something, when you're going to see something, and the technology exists to tabulate that. If you go to a website, if you go to YouTube, if you go to Hulu, if you go here or there, people will see that and they will know. 10 years ago, if you weren't in a Nielsen family, nobody knew whether or not you were watching television, and they didn't care, you know? Now, there are a bunch of different ways for you to express your opinion about what's happening in media by where you put your attention, where you put your money, whether you buy it on iTunes, whether you buy it on Amazon.com, wherever you go, you're registering. But with great power comes great responsibility, right? So you have to find out about these issues. And you can't just go to the same three or four websites that are going to tell you whatever makes you feel good, whether it's MSNBC and Democracy Now! Or it's the Drudge Report and Fox News. You have a responsibility to educate yourself a little bit more and make sure that your choices make the sort of political impact that you want, however you want that to be heard.
Well, I have to say, I don't spend a lot of time listening, you know, going to Matt Drudge and all that. I mean, I've seen it, but you know, it's a big problem. I mean, that responsibility you're talking about, I don't think most people do that. They just stay with what reassures them, and that's what happens. And what Nancy said is true. People are also demoralized. They don't think they can move anything. You say we have great power. I don't know if most of you believe that.
Well, think about Trayvon Martin, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, Trayvon Martin is this 17-year-old African American kid, unarmed, walking in a subdivision in Florida. He gets shot and killed by a neighborhood watch volunteer. The police take the guy to the police station, they interview him, and then they decide, we're probably not going to charge him, right? Mm-hmm. The family goes before the cameras and says, we think he was racially profiled. The next thing you know, Change.org has 1 million signatures on a petition to say, prosecute this guy. Al Sharpton holds this huge rally in Sanford, Florida that draws thousands of people to say, charge this guy. It becomes an international story. There are stories in papers in Israel, in Britain, in Australia about all of this. And within a month, George Zimmerman is charged with murder.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Is that wrong?
What I'm saying is people made their views known, and they got a result.
Uh-huh. Oh, I see.
The guy got charged with murder, and there's going to be a trial.
Mm-hmm.
Before you know, all of this fragmentation of media, all these cable outlets, you know, the ability to get the petition out there and get the facts of the case, this all surfaced on social media first. If that hadn't happened, the police would have made their decision, and it would have been like, okay, you know, no charges.
Oh,
and I kind of believe when somebody shoots and kills somebody, I want there kind of to be a trial to figure out what happened. You know?
So the whole thing might have gone just under the radar had we not
It might have just been a regional story.
Sure.
You know, this guy shot and killed somebody. The police won't charge him. They say there's not enough evidence, and then we go on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't able to go on to the next thing,
right,
because the world focused on that story. And a big reason why that happened is because of social media and because of the fragmentation of media. And so many people were trying to get at that story. It became such a huge buzz that Florida couldn't ignore it.
Right.
Now, there are some people who take his side who say that he was unfairly charged.
Perhaps, but
you know, the world's attention came on it. It forced Florida authorities to look at the case, and now they have charged him, and we'll have a trial. Well, we'll see all of this evidence, and a jury will decide whether or not he committed murder.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on.
10,
ground control to Major Tom.
8, 7, 6,
commencing countdown, engines on.
3, 2,
check ignition and may God's love be with you.
You've really made the grade, and the papers want to know whose shirt you wear. Now it's time to leave the capsule if you dare.
This is Major Tom to ground control. stepping through the dark, and I'm floating in a most peculiar way, and the stars look very different today.
Now for something completely different.